This episode is brought to you by Fetch. Fetch is a kennel alternative right here in Denver, not a traditional doggy daycare or boarding school. They offer one-on-one private pet care for all kinds of pets, both furry and non-furry. And their employees are experienced, insured, bonded, and background checked, so you can rest easy knowing your pet is in good hands. Basically, they know pets. I used to watch a Burmese mountain dog named Sven, who was just like walking a polar bear. It was insane. Fetch offers pet sitting, dog walking, pet taxi, medication administration, and more. And he hated going on walks. I could like walk him around the block and then he was like, he just liked to lay in the bathtub. So if you're looking for high quality pet care you can trust, check out Fetch at northdenver.fetchpetcare.com. That's northdenver.fetchpetcare.com.
Today on CityCast Denver, we've got news breaking all over the place. With the tattered cover up for sale, new twists in the fight to save El Chapultepec, and one of Denver's most memorable gift shops poised for change. All that and Congresswoman Lauren Boebert got a big boost from Republican Party leaders last week, but will it be enough? I've got Westward editor Patty Calhoun on with me to sort through what matters and what doesn't. Plus, we respond to your comments on dog poop in Westminster. Today is Tuesday, April 2nd. I'm Paul Caroli, in for Bree Davies, and here's what Denver's talking about. Westward editor Patty Calhoun, welcome back to CityCast Denver.
Thanks so much.
So Patty, we're going to start with some quick hits here because you were just coming in here pretty hot with some, there's all this breaking news, so let's just get into it here. Number one, CBS Colorado has a scoop over the weekend from the proprietor of the gift shop at the city-owned Buffalo Bills Museum and Grave atop Lookout Mountain. I have to read the quote. Bill Carl said, "I got a letter addressed to my grandmother saying, please be out of that building by the end of December. You've done a nice job, but we have other plans." Patty, what's going on?
Well, I don't think it's a pickleball court, but we'll find out. You know, I've been working on the best of Denver for the last few months and all weekend. And of course, things happen that you want to talk about as soon as the best of Denver hits and you can't do anything with it. Mm-hmm. But I actually went to a lecture by Steve Friesen, who used to run the Buffalo Bill Museum and Grave facility for 21 years.
Okay.
And heard about, people were talking about this Saturday night. And of course, they're talking about the tattered cover too. That's another issue. But the Carl family had run Echo Lake. They'd actually run Red Rocks a long time ago, concessions. But they'd run some of these old facilities for Denver, city and county of Denver. They lost the Echo Lake contract, and there people, not as many people had gone to Echo Lake, but they were worried they were going to lose the Buffalo Bill contract. And what they do is they run the souvenir stand,
right,
the Pawhuska Teepee souvenir stand that was built in 1921 by Johnny Baker, Buffalo Bill's godson, mm-hmm, and with the city of Denver, and opened it, and it's run as that was the original museum, and it's been a souvenir store for decades and a little cafe.
I mean, it's a historic landmark in its own right.
Well, it should be.
At this point, it's 100 years old.
Right. It's 100 years old. It's right by the grave, but it is a perennial Best of Denver winner because this souvenir store is like a dream for anyone coming from any place around the country and the world because it just has every kind of tchotchke imaginable, including, you know, frisbee, cow pie frisbees, one of my favorites, lots of little jokes, some actually nice jewelry and pots and things like that. But it is a great historic spot. And I cannot imagine what the city of Denver thinks it's going to do with it right now when it's got plenty of other things on its plate. Maybe it's going to turn it into a private events thing, which happened at Chief Hosa, but at the moment, it isn't a good look for Denver.
Yeah, I think, well, there is another side of this. I mean, we've heard rumblings for years around Buffalo Bill that there's some historical revision in the offing here. It's time to take a fresh look at who Buffalo Bill was and maybe depict him in a new way to be more inclusive.
And you can certainly do that. You've got a whole museum you can do it in. And you can also, if you need to, cherry pick what are the problems in a souvenir store. And I think over the years, you can see they've definitely gotten rid of the rubber tomahawks, for example. Hmm. But if you look at Buffalo Bill, and Steve Friesen is really the expert on this, he was amazingly inclusive in the late 1800s, early 1900s, when he ran his Wild West show. He had Native Americans who were paid, who were choosing to go. He fed everyone equally who was out on the march. I mean, yeah. He really was an interesting man. We're not saying everything he did was great. But if you're going to get rid of the souvenir store, you got a lot of other things you need to look at, too.
Yeah, that is an interesting one. We may have to talk to Steve Friesen a little bit more about that on the show, because I've keep hearing from folks like Buffalo Bill, like when I talk about how much I like the museum, I hear people say, like, Buffalo Bill, wasn't he some asshole? And I'm like, I guess I don't know.
If you actually look at the history of it, of all the, you know, he was once the best known man in the world. He was like the Taylor Swift of his era, if you can believe it. But He would take thousands of people on these Buffalo Bill Wild West show tours and around the world.
All right, let's go to another one here. You alluded to it, the tattered cover. We found out that not only is it in bankruptcy, but over the weekend they announced they're officially for sale. What's going on, Patty?
Well, what they first needed to do before they could even really think about a sale was clean up the books and get it into some semblance of order. The Steve Friesen event I went to was at Aspen Grove, which is a lovely little store. It's great that that wasn't one of the ones that was closed. Kwame Spearman, who had been one member of the group that bought it last time, mm-hmm. has said he was interested in looking again, or he knows people who are looking. What they said when they did this filing is, we are now in a position to actually entertain offers if they're the right kind of offers, but presumably they're also in a position where they could keep running it.
Interesting.
So the question just becomes, is there someone who would step up? A national group, it wouldn't be independent anymore, but someone who could really run it to the level Joyce Meskis established 50 years ago. So we'll see, but it would be such a loss if it shut altogether. So you have to see what kind of compromises can be made.
I mean, it's been a tough few years for the Tattered Cover, but I mean, this is Denver's iconic bookstore at the end of the day. I think a lot of people think of it as more than just a private company.
Right, and I went to an event there beside the one downtown at the Lowenstein on 2 weeks ago, where they were talking about freedom of information and just how important it is as a free speech advocate and an ongoing institution. As I said, we're working on the 40th anniversary of Best of Denver, and Tattered Cover is a very frequent award winner in that issue.
I'm sure. Okay, so there's one other story here we should talk about, and this is just an update from last time you were on, when we talked about this dispute over the old jazz club, El Chapultepec, which is down in Lodo, a couple blocks from Coors Field. It's a historic jazz club. Now the owners, the Monforts, say they want to tear it down, replace it with a new bar and patio. What's the latest you've heard, Patty?
To give context, it hasn't been a jazz club since December 2020, and the family that ran it didn't want to run a jazz club anymore. They wanted to keep the name, but they didn't want the name running another jazz club in that building. Mm-hmm. So for 2 years ago, the Monforts bought it after the last leaseholder, Valente Corleone, had just ripped it apart structurally. So there's no question it's in far worse shape than it was 4 years ago. The question is, can some of it be saved to give people an idea of what once stood there? Mm-hmm. And Historic Denver went and filed for a landmark application. Since then, the owners, which is not all the Monforts, it's the Monfort companies, but it's mostly Kenny Monfort, who's
okay,
the son.
Okay, that's a good distinction.
Right.
I noticed
it is not Dick Monfort.
No one was interrogating him on the tour of El Chapultepec if they're going to sell the team or not.
Right, exactly. So Kenny Monfort and Matt, his partner in this, they're very careful to show we are not related to the Monfort ownership of the Rockies, although it just happens to be kitty corner across the street.
Right.
So they showed, they did do a dog and pony show last week showing the problems in the building. That building is not in great shape. We know that. The question is, can some of it be saved to give people an idea of what once stood there, what that area of town really once was like, which is the goal of a lot of historic preservation.
Have you heard anything about a compromise? Are they still
talking? Oh, I think there's a compromise definitely in the works.
Okay.
There was a rally outside on Friday, a lot of people talking about how they want to save it. Mm-hmm. And remember, you can't save the jazz club. The jazz club isn't there anymore.
Right.
They have Jazz at Dazzle now. You can save some of the building that held the jazz club and was internationally famous. Not as internationally famous as Buffalo Bill, but still internationally famous.
All right, Patty, let's take a quick break and come back and talk politics. All right, we're back. Time to talk politics because all eight of Colorado's congressional seats are up for grabs in November. But we now have a better idea of some of the serious candidates to win those seats. Here in Denver, it's not going to be competitive. I don't know about you, Patty, but I haven't heard anyone stepping up to challenge Diana DeGette, the Democrat. Have you heard of anyone?
I haven't heard of it. That doesn't mean there isn't someone who isn't there. But there's no, when you talk about up for grabs, she has her hand, that's stuck to Diana DeGette's hands. We are not losing her until she decides she wants to retire.
Yeah, I wonder about that. She served in that seat since 1997.
Well, you have to think Pat Schroeder, she's following in that tradition of a very long civic servant. But the question is, you can see how people want to move up, you know, from city council, from the state legislature, and that's one direction they can't move it. Because yeah. She's still there. Joe Neguse, he is not going to be moving this time. He doesn't have any real competition.
Just got a new leadership
seat
in the House as well.
But everything else looks like it's really could be a wild ride.
It's getting fun out there. Let's start with CD5. So that's mostly the Colorado Springs area, El Paso County. Patty, what are you seeing down in CD5?
Well, this has a completely different controversy than any other one because Dave Williams, who's running, again, he's run before.
Sorry. Dave, let's go Brandon Williams.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Although he hasn't changed his name yet, as I can tell, on the ballot this year, but
okay.
We're not
we'll
sure.
We'll see.
He's also the head of the Colorado Republican Party. So there's a lot of concern that he is violating some of the ethical rules and boundaries you are supposed to keep when you are the head of the Republican Party. And you also happen to be running for a seat. So Jeff Crank, who's running against him, is concerned about it in the Republican Party. You've seen a lot of other people who took a look at it, John Southers, Wayne Williamson, just said, no, we're not going to do it. Mm-hmm. But the most controversial figure this side of Lauren Boebert, Dave Williams, you know, is really going to gum things up. There are going to be a lot of protests as we go forward.
Right. He's very Trumpy. He's very Trumpy in his approach. He really wants to align himself with Trump. I mean, he's doing the same Trump move of taking over the party and then using it to his own benefit here in
right.
this race.
I mean, he forced the party to say we're going to endorse Trump when there were still other candidates, which, the state Republican Party is not supposed to do. He's definitely stoking the election denier groups.
But here's the thing. At the same time, the party likes him. Because he just got 70% of the delegates at the party meeting where they chose who would be on the ballot. Now, Crank, I guess, is going to go the petition route to get on the ballot.
And he should be able to do it. But the party, the little tiny part of the party who likes Dave Williams. Mm-hmm. I mean, most Republicans will say they don't. But I think they've thrown up their hands. They don't really know how to re-grab control of the Colorado Republican Party.
That's the big question this year. There's this divide. There's the old school, the Phil Anschutz school, the more like mainstream, maybe we would say never Trumper Republicans. And then there's this new insurgent wing that is fully in control, it seems.
Well, you hear Dick Wadhams, the former Republican chair. You hear Ken Buck, the former Republican chair. I mean, these guys have been followed by Dave Williams, and I think they truly don't know quite what to do until he gets out. And then you can kind of see where the control could be.
Right.
Who is there going to be there to step up? Christy Burton Brown, the last head of the Colorado Republican Party, looks like the voice of reason in retrospect.
Hmm.
And of course, Dave Williams is going after her for money and other things.
So I happen to be like remarkably well-sourced on this particular topic because we've been doing this special project that I'm not ready to talk about. But I've been talking to a lot of Republican Party insider types, candidates, and they think that CD5 is maybe vulnerable. I mean, this is Yemi Mobilades, Colorado Springs now. That's the independent mayor. I looked up who are the Democrats running for this seat. I wonder if you've heard of any of them. Can I just run some names
by you? Please
do. Okay. Orlando Avion?
No.
John Edgar?
No.
River Gasson?
No.
Joseph O. Gay?
No.
Adam Gillard?
No.
Joe Reagan?
No.
And here's the last one, all right? David Torres?
Nope. Now, that's not Joe O'Day.
No.
You know, this is the problem. So you think about it. 5 months ago, when people were thinking, do I want to run for Democrats? Do I run in this district that always is a loser for Democrats? Because they thought the incumbent was still going to be running. If they had jumped in, they might have had a shot. It's kind of like when we go into three and really four now.
Yeah. Well, let's go into three now. That's the Western Slope. That's also all the way into Pueblo. This is a humongous district currently represented by Congresswoman Lauren Boebert. But she is, of course, running now for CD4. So this seat is open. And it looks like it's going to be Jeff Hurd, who's this like mainstream GOP guy. Do you know anything about Jeff Hurd?
He's certainly gotten a lot of endorsements from the mainstream GOP. And I would not call Dave Williams mainstream GOP. I mean, you can see there are Bill Owens, there are people out there, Hank Brown, there are people who are still mainstream GOPers who are not part of the Williams cabal. I think he's got a really good shot. This is a very Republican district. The strangest thing is that Lauren Boebert ever won out over Scott Tipton, which I think mean it was just because he was asleep, the incumbent. He just, people were, it was time for another change. Tipton had never made a lot of headlines, and she did.
Well, this is the other thing that's interesting in this district is because it does lean Republican, yet now there's this Democratic candidate, Adam Frisch, who nearly beat Boebert last time and then fundraised on that for almost 2 years. And I was just talking to this a friend of mine, a source, Ian Silveri, who's been on the show, and he was saying that Frisch is actually the third biggest fundraiser in the entire House of Representatives. That's including the leaders, you know, the hot shots. And he's not even in there, and he's number three. So he has this huge war chest in a Republican district, and this Jeff Hurd, who's kind of not much of a reputation, at least not in Denver. I don't know. This is an interesting one.
It's tough to tell, and it's another one where if people had known Boebert might not have been running, somebody else might have gotten into the race, a Democrat who might have had a wider appeal. I mean, Frisch is an Aspen liberal. That doesn't play well in parts of the third, but he certainly has name recognition now.
He does now,
but
yeah.
Did he come as close as he did last time as an anti-Boebert vote, in which case Jeff Hurd might get a lot of those votes?
Perhaps.
Or do people just like Adam Frisch? So we'll see. That's a tough one.
Totally, totally fascinating race there. Okay, last one. We've talked about her basically the whole time here. This is Lauren Boebert's race for CD4. This is the Eastern Plains all the way down into Douglas County. We're talking Windsor. We're talking Greeley. There was some news here. What happened exactly last week with Greg Lopez? Can you explain that, Patty?
So Ken Buck is another incumbent who suddenly decides, well, he'd already decided he wasn't running again. So he'd announced that. That enabled Boebert to switch to CD4. She wouldn't have done it to run against an incumbent for a primary. But then Ken Buck decides he's leaving early. Mm-hmm. So as of March 22nd, he was out of Congress. That means Colorado has to have a special election to get a new CD4 representative before they elect another one in November. So on primary day, we're going to have two votes in CD4. We're going to have someone to replace Ken Buck so that they're represented until January.
For this last 6 months.
Right, for this last 6 months. And there's going to be a primary to decide who goes on the November ballot, who might replace whoever the temporary person is. So I just today looked up and I go, there must be some Democrats. We've heard about them, but I thought Democrats can run for this temporary spot too.
I wonder if you saw the same story I saw. What did you see?
Well, I just Googled quickly and said, who is the Democrat? And they're deciding today. But there are four Democrats that are already running for the primary for the place on the November ballot. So they could go, the Democrats could decide to go the way the Republicans did, which is take none of the above. Mm-hmm. You know, Jerry Sonnenberg, very good candidate. The Republicans wanted to be the temporary candidate too. Mm-hmm. He's already on the November ballot, but he wasn't picked. Greg Lopez, the very controversial mayor of Parker, was selected to be the fill-in. Mm-hmm. Now, you can have a placeholder, but placeholders are usually not bomb throwers. And Greg Lopez is a really, he's quite the character.
Well, maybe in the 2024 Colorado GOP, he's still more of a placeholder, you know. Maybe he's more of the mean now.
Well, it's going to be he will be, unless one of these Democrats, or who knows who they could pick. They could pick, I'm trying to think of the best known Democrat in that area, but they could pick someone who would be a placeholder who might have more appeal than Greg Lopez, and maybe we'll have someone else entirely for the next 6 months. It's a crazy move to pick someone who is pretty controversial. I can understand they didn't want to give a head start to one of the candidates in November who's already on the ballot. Boebert said she didn't want to do it because it could be confusing, but Sonnenberg did, and he would have been a good choice.
And he was, I think, the number two vote getter.
He was, and there was a split. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was pretty split. I think that whole thing does redound to Boebert's benefit, I would say. If I'm her, I'm watching that, and I'm thinking, I don't know if any of these other guys I'm running against in the primary has got the whole party behind them. And she's got so much support from the Trump endorsement, the money.
Well, then we go to the split, which is if you have, I mean, how many candidates are still left looking at the November ballot, but they, people keep making it, like Deb Flora just made it. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have at least a half dozen Republicans on the primary ballot.
Right. That's the June 25th primary ballot. There was one Democrat whose name I saw this morning. There was an article here in the Denver Gazette, an internal poll from Ike McCorkle's campaign.
I saw that one, too. That he's ahead by 7%.
Well, I thought it was interesting because, and one, it's an internal poll, so it's his campaign, and he's choosing to release it, so huge grain of salt. But it said he was 7 points up on Boebert, but it also said he was trailing Sonnenberg, another Republican.
Right, which goes to show, depending on who they polled, that there are a lot of really traditional Republicans in that area, in CD4. And there were earlier polls that said they just weren't excited about anybody coming in. They see a representative coming from the Western Slope as a carpetbagger. Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of that with Lauren Boebert. These people have represented the Eastern Plains for a long time, some in the state legislature, some in other places. And they don't appreciate it. And I think a lot of the residents of the area don't appreciate someone just coming in who's a headline grabber.
Okay, just quick before we wrap up the segment here. If you were to put odds on Boebert winning this primary right now.
I'm going to give her a 50%. Okay. I mean, it's a tricky one still because of the math. Because she could just get 25% of the vote on the primary, but she could get it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, one more break, and then we'll be back with listener comments and questions. All right, we're back. The best way to end every Tuesday show, we always love hearing from you, our brilliant and hilarious listeners, about the things you care about. So every Tuesday, we share a comment or answer one of your questions that comes through on the CityCast Denver hotline. This one is a voicemail about our Friday show with Kyle Clark, where we talked about Westminster's dog park. Have you heard about this situation, Patty?
I have.
Okay, here's the voicemail.
Hi, CityCast Denver. So I have a comment for your show on Friday about the dog poop in parks. Anonymously, we've all been there. We've all had a time you couldn't scoop. You didn't have a plastic bag. So I had an idea that tends to amuse and delight people, which is karma poops, meaning when you do have a bag and there's like 10 poops on the ground in between your dog and the trash can, just fill that bag up with more and people around you will appreciate it and you'll feel like you're actually getting something with your plastic bag because sometimes the bag can take more. That's my comment. Thanks. Bye.
Patty, what do you think about karma poops, picking up karma poops at the dog park?
Having just found a lot of poop in front of my house and I don't have a dog, I salute it. You know, the question also is, what do you do about, do those dog bags, do those disintegrate? I mean, or does the plastic live forever?
I have no idea.
I think that's what I would like. When you really think about a problem, is there a way to make biodegradable dog poop bags?
Huh. That's a thought.
You know, you think about those newspaper bags that most people use or whatever they find these days. Those aren't biodegradable.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm hearing from producer Olivia. There are some biodegradable dog poop bags you can buy. So that's nice.
That's karma.
That's karma. We did get another text here on that same topic, the dog park convo. This is from Quinn in Capitol Hill. I heard your thing about dog parks and the privatization of them. Oh, so this must have been my suggestion that some enterprising individual buy up some land and open a dog park full of great amenities. Quinn says there is an app that you can rent a private yard hourly for your dog. So it's already sort of a thing. It's called Sniff Spot. You know about Sniff Spot?
I've heard of Sniff Spot.
I never heard of this. Is this happening? Is this prevalent here? Are people doing this?
I'm not. But I can't tell you. Some people might.
All right. Well, that was so fun. Patty, thanks so much for joining me once more.
My pleasure.
On CityCast Denver. See you next time.
Hi, this is Yesenia from Wash Park. I'm calling about nachos that must be tried. I swear by them. I die by them. At Dos Santos on 17th Street, the ahi tuna nachos are, like, actually my hyperfixation craving meal. They're so good. Just, like, really good, flavorful chips with ahi tuna and then, like, pickled onions, some radish, avocado. I don't even know what the dressing is. It's just so good. Highly recommend. It's definitely not, like, traditional. It's not cheesy, like, traditional nachos, but, like, such good food. So, hope you try it out. Bye.
That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. If you enjoyed the show, why not take a minute to tell Buffalo Bill cookbook author Steve Friesen about us. Rate the show wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to our morning newsletter and learn more about us at denver.citycast.fm. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. See you then.
So the good news is I'm not coughing anymore, I think. That'll stop as soon as I'm on the air.